NYPD Blue begins its new season next Tuesday. On today's archive edition of Fresh Air, we're featuring interviews with the co-creator of the show, David Milch, and the show's consultant, Bill Clark. Later, we'll hear a conversation with Jim McDaniel, the actor who plays the role of Lieutenant Fancy. David Milch has written much of the dialogue that's made the show such a hit. Bill Clark helps keep the series believable. He's a former New York City homicide detective who worked on such high-profile cases as the Son of Sam and the Zodiac murders. Many of the stories on NYPD Blue are based on his work. He was still on the force when he began consulting. He retired in 1995 and moved to L.A., where he continues to work on the show. David Milch and Bill Clark also collaborated on a book, True Blue, The Real Stories Behind NYPD Blue. Terry Gross spoke with them in 1995. She asked Detective Clark about interrogating suspects. Often on NYPD Blue during an interrogation, the cop tries to convince the suspect that he's better off without a lawyer.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that annoys me with television, other than our show, is the fact that people seem to think that the lawyer just comes in to kind of referee the interrogation so that nobody lays a hand on him and he's not intimidated. Well, the reality is, if an attorney enters the room, if he allows the suspect to confess, he is then going to be sued for malpractice. So he is not going to allow him to answer any of your questions. So effectively, the interrogation is shut down the minute that he calls for an attorney. So we work very hard to keep him out of there so that we don't shut down what, in most cases, is the single biggest piece of evidence against the guy, which is a confession.
Now, on the show, the cops are always trying to make it seem like it's going to be a better deal for the suspect if he talks to the cops before the lawyer comes.
Yeah, that's the biggest lie we ever tell. I mean, it's most times...
You suspects out there, Bill doesn't mean it.
Yeah. Most times when a guy sits into that interview room, if he doesn't confess, then a great deal of time he'll wind up either walking back out a free man or it'll be at trial a big piece of evidence against him if he does. I'll give you an example of something. It's not my favorite subject, but the O.J. Simpson case. I think one of the mistakes that was made in that case was there was so much evidence against O.J. Simpson, physical evidence. I've never seen so much circumstantial evidence in any case, that rather than get the confession, they did a brief 30-minute interview with him and let him go. Now, with all of the so-called inconsistencies and mishandling and anything else that was brought out in trial, if there had been a confession from O.J. Simpson, he would have been convicted. There was no way that the jury could have looked past that. And that's the lesson that a detective learns very early in his career is, with a confession, it's easier for you on the stand because they're not going to beat you up as hard because they know there's a confession that they've got to deal with. And to me, that's the single biggest thing I've always worked for.
So what are some of the things that a cop might tell a suspect to get the suspect to not make that phone call to the lawyer?
Well, one of the things is you tell a guy, listen, you know, you're the guy that's going to do the time, not the attorney. He's looking to come in here for money. He doesn't care about your welfare. You know, this is the time to make the deal. It's going to help you. You can explain why you did it, the motives behind it. You know, we know you didn't mean this. It was an accident type thing. And, you know, something had to drive you to commit this act. I had a case very similar to the Simpson case a week or two before that. And a man and woman stabbed brutally. The woman was stabbed about 30 times, the man about 60. Trail of blood leaving the scene. I had the guy in about 3 days later. Excuse me. And I told him, I says, listen, you know, this is a vicious crime here. And this is horrible. I says, something had to push you over the edge to do this. You don't want to go in as a crazy man, or just a vicious murderer. Something had to do it. And he explained it away that it was a jealousy thing, and he lost control. He had done a few years in jail, and he realized when he cut the first guy that he had blew it and he was going to go back, and he just lost control, and he just stabbed out of frustration. So
it's important to realize that it's so easy to simplify or oversimplify what a detective does during the course of an interrogation as one thing or another thing. There's an element of physical intimidation sometime, but much more often you have to be sympathetic to the guy. You have to let him know that you understand what moved him and put him in that position. And when someone is willing to cross the line the way a murderer has been by the act of committing the murder, you have to realize that the court of justice is not necessarily the thing that he or she is looking for in the course of the interrogation. They want to feel understood. They want to feel supported. There's a whole range of motivations that the detective can look to satisfy and subordinate the suspect's impulse to get someone else in there. If the person feels that the detective is his best ally, or the detective understands him, in the case Billy's talking about when he got the confession from Flowers, afterwards Flowers said he was the nicest guy Bill had ever met. This poor guy wound up dying a few days later of an asthma attack. But he felt that Billy was his best friend at the end of that interview.
You know, this subject comes up in the book that you co-wrote together, True Blue, about NYPD Blue and the stories behind it, that David, you had asked Detective Bill Clark if he actually ever, you know, roughed anybody up to get a confession.
And, yes.
And, well, Bill, you give a description not of roughing somebody up, but of making the motions just to kind of inspire a certain amount of fear, I guess. In the suspect, you say, you know, you locked the door, took your watch off, and put your ring on the table, and said, now we're going to talk about what I'm here for. You took this man's life, and you have to understand, if what it takes to make you give that up is laying hands on you, I'm going to beat you till you beg to die. Now, would you follow up on that, or is that just a threat to let the person know you're serious?
No, I would think, fortunately, most people growing up in this country have seen so many movies where cops and detectives beat a guy senseless that if you just make them think that we're going to get to that point somewhere along the line, it has the same effect as if you beat their head up against the wall for 2 hours. And I'm not some kind of guy that gets any pleasure out of hitting you people, so I that's not my act. But if they feel that if it goes down to the wire, that's one of the options, it's something they think about. I don't think about it that much. I'm playing a game with this guy. I mean, I've done interrogations for 12 hours before a guy confessed.
12 hours in one sitting?
One sitting, one person. I just come in and out of the room. One that I remember was a triple homicide. Guy was in for a rape that if I didn't get a confession, he was going to go in for that rape, and those three homicides never would have been solved. And I really wasn't sure he did it up until about the 11th hour.
Bill, how did you keep your concentration during a 12-hour interrogation?
Well, I mean, there were times I'd step out of the room and I'd just clear my head. I mean, it is very, very tiring and at times. And the thing that you're terrified of, and I've had it happen, where you've got a guy and you spend 4 or 5 hours and then you ask some stupid question that you know set it back to ground zero again. You know, you have to be very careful what you say. And
like what? What could be a setback like that?
If you're looking to get a guy to flip on his co-defendants, and you say something about being a rat or something that, I mean, I'm using real bad examples, but I think you get the idea.
It gives
the
wrong emotional connotation to Bill's position.
So something that's going to insult the suspect.
Yeah, what he's looking to make the guy feel that he's sympathetic towards him. And the other thing that Billy will do, and it's something that we haven't been able to do particularly successfully on the show because of the time element, is that when Billy goes at a guy, sometimes he'll have only one piece. He'll have a license plate, or he'll have the driver's license, or something, and he may not use it for 6 hours. He'll go at the guy with irrelevancies to exhaust him, or to build up a particular state of emotional receptivity, and then finally, when he uses the piece of evidence he's got, it invokes a whole range of knowledge that Bill has in the guy's mind that Billy doesn't have, and so it's a very delicate emotional framework that he's trying to generate there, and that's one reason why Billy likes to work by himself.
David Milch and Bill Clark are co-executive producers of NYPD Blue. They spoke with Terry Gross in 1995. We'll be back with more after this break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Terry Gross's interview with David Milch and Bill Clark of NYPD Blue.
On NYPD Blue, there's been a lot of relationships within the force. You know, cops dating other cops.
Yes, uh-huh.
And now, of course, Andy Sipowicz is married to the assistant DA, which is related. Bill, how much of this actually went on the force in New York when you were there?
Well, you asked the wrong guy, because I'm just recently got engaged to a girl who was my partner about 10 years ago. But, I mean, something that was said before that I guess I didn't go into in enough detail. We spend 8 hours, 10 hours, sometimes 36 hours with your partner, working in a very intense job with dealing with all types of emotions. People have just sustained the greatest loss of their life. They've lost their husband, their wife, their mother, their father, their sister, their brother, the breadwinner of the family. I mean, all of the things that happen to somebody when a homicide happens. And you're dealing with all of those emotions, and this is the person who tries, when you get alone, when you're in the car going from point A to point B, this is the person that you talk to, and hopefully you try to make some kind of semblance of sanity out of the whole thing and feel good enough that you can go on to the next step. And it's bound to make you very, very close with that person. And if that person happens to be a female, it's a together person who makes you, you know, it's just going to draw you closer together. Or if it's just the opposite, if you can't stand this person, it's going to drive you apart. So, again, in my experience, I've worked with several females, but as I said, one who was my partner, I've just recently got engaged to. So.
Were you romantically involved while you were partners?
No, but there was a certain attraction, there was no doubt about it. But at that point, no, it wouldn't have been the right thing.
Is that a dangerous thing on the job when you feel that emotionally involved with somebody? You know, when that spark is there, even if you haven't acted on it, because your lives are both constantly in jeopardy.
No, but I can remember, we're doing that in one of our episodes this year. You do get overly protective. I mean, this is, you know, you do cop stuff every day, and a guy goes in or a girl goes in to buy drugs or to make purchase of guns or stolen property. And naturally, if you really have heavy emotional feelings about the person or, in fact, in love with, it does become the terror can take charge there for a few minutes. It happened to me one time, I know.
What happened?
This girl who I had these feelings for was going in to purchase some stolen property, and it was a real nothing thing. It was, we had six detectives on the scene, and she was supposed to give a signal when she had made a thing, and it was supposed to be done in front of the house, and she went into the house, and then all of a sudden I started getting anxiety, like, what, something must be going wrong. And it was just strictly a question of me overreacting because I had feelings for the girl.
So what'd you do? I mean, did you go in and
No, I didn't.
You just sat there and were nervous, or did you?
The last time I experienced that, I was in Vietnam, and it was at night, it was pitch dark, and I was in an ambush patrol, and I started hearing things, and you get to control your fear, and that's basically what it was. It was just my controlling my fear, but a fear that shouldn't have even been there.
Bill, you retired from the New York City Police as from your job as a detective during the second season of NYPD Blue. While you were still working as a detective and consulting with the series, was there a new degree of, well, almost self-consciousness that entered your work? Would you be reporting on a case and in the back of your mind see it as an episode?
No, I mean, I did my job as I saw it. I never really thought if a case went down while I was doing it that this would be a good episode. No, I...
Billy is not someone who is comfortable with that kind of irony or distance when... Mm-hmm. When he's working as a detective, he takes that very, very seriously. And I know from speaking with him about cases that he was working on all during the period when he was still an active detective. But you know, if you're a good detective, so much of that coincides with being a good storyteller, because what you're trying to do is sort of extrapolate a whole world or a whole personality from pieces of information. And so when Billy would talk about the cases he was working on, he didn't really need to rephrase for my purposes, because just Billy being Billy, and the way I think I say in the book, you know, when Billy would work on cases, you'd watch him get sick over the cases. They would just occupy his whole being, and when a case wasn't going well, he would be miserable and you couldn't talk to him, and so he was like the most beautiful sort of prism for both the case and for a cop reacting to the case.
David Milch, executive producer of NYPD Blue, and Detective Bill Clark, who's now the show's co-executive producer. They spoke with Terry Gross in 1995. More NYPD Blue in the next half hour. This is Fresh Air.